Welcome, guys. High tech.
Yeah.
You know what, Bill, how'd you get the name Chocolate?
Man, it goes back a long time, back to my restaurant days before I did a full-time cultivation, you know, branded weed. I was obviously trapped and working in restaurants and opened a restaurant there in Troy, Michigan. And just my coworkers just gave me the name Chocolate one day. It was actually Baby Chocolate. It had a baby face. Getting a little older now, just turned 40 this year. But it used to be Baby Chocolate was the full name. I just shortened it to Chocolate as I got older. But nice. Sometimes you'll hear a Baby Chocolate come out. You know, that's a friend.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just turned 42. Yeah. How's it feel? Same?
I'll say, man, like this year is like, I got two kids and this year was the first year. Like I started to feel kind of old, like hiring people within the brand. And I'll be like, oh, you remember when like the Shady LP dropped and I wasn't alive. And I'm like, what? Like, you don't remember like going listening on your way to school? Like you'd turn on TV, MTV would be playing the videos. They were like, nah. And I'm like, how old are you? Like 23. And I'm like, okay. Like,
it's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild.
You start to feel like it was this year for me that like things like that started to hit.
I bought my kids the 1985 original Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like Mario Brothers, you know,
the best.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best. I bought them that. So I play with them once in a while just to bring it back.
Yeah. You know? I bought my kids one of those like bootleg Game Boys too that have all the old games.
Yep.
And they're kind of like, what is this? And I'm like, just play it.
You know, you kind of get to relive it. Uh-huh. That's why I got it for him. Tyler, you're head of cultivation. Tech.
Yep.
Congrats, bro.
Thank you.
You guys, I mean, you're the business side, right? And you're cultivation.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, like we both, you know, we're both in the shop every day together, you know, I keep the operations and the cultivation going. He keeps, you know, the vision, the branding and sales and all that going. But I mean, we work literally right across from each other every day.
Yeah.
So
respect, man. I mean, you guys just won best overall, which is what you really want to win as an Olympics, right? That's where everyone's going for.
Yeah.
Best overall and then best tasting.
Yeah, and for me, that's number two. You know, I mean, like all the other categories are great, but I mean, if you're overall and you're tasting good, that's it.
Yeah. No, congrats, man. That goes. It's a lot of work. How did you guys meet?
This has been like right when I started growing. It's like 2012, where I bought all my equipment from. I got a part-time job on the weekends, and that's where he shopped. So
Hydro Shop?
Yeah.
Hydro store relationships. You know how those.
Yeah, I know exactly how that goes.
All my friends. Yeah. I mean, everybody I kick it with. I mean, it's all from that store. You know, I worked there for about 5 years. So it was cool. I worked for a guy who owned the place who was really, really kind of ahead of his time as a cultivator back then. So I learned a lot from him. He was really good too back in those days. So yeah, I mean, it was just kind of clicked, you know?
Nice. And how did that go down? You were shopping there?
Yeah. So we were shopping there doing the whole caregiver model slash, you know, I guess you could say gray market in Michigan where we were running under the Medical Act, but everyone was kind of blowing out the rules. We started in houses, moved to commercial buildings, start shopping there. They were the ones that really took care of our account, order stuff. It was there like the next day, you know, from Sunlight at the time, you know, Hawthorne.
And, yeah.
Were you a manager yet or were you just
like, I just working there?
Yeah.
So like it, but yeah,
we'd go up there pretty much, you know, in those days, like you'd work till about noon with your guys, you'd, you know, get in like 8 or 9, work till like noon, go take lunch. We'd all jump in the truck. Cause there was a little diner right next to the shop. It was in a strip mall, big shop. And we'd grab food, go next door, you know, talk about weed, you know, trade cuts, you know, just like new kind of emerging grower stuff that, you know, I think, I was glad we all went through in the industry, you know, kind of forming us. But
was it more open like that in Michigan in the Hydro Shops? Because out here in California, you know, back in 12, I mean, they didn't really talk about cannabis. It was like kind of like nobody would really let you talk about it.
It was pretty open, man.
Yeah. So I think it has to do with different.
Yeah. Like
different regions probably handle it.
I mean, I think like right around that time is when it was kind of shifting, you know, before that it was a little bit more quiet, but I mean, the medical thing started in 2008 in Michigan. So I mean, pretty much right away, you know, people got into it pretty heavy.
Okay. And just open.
We had stores everywhere. I mean, if you were shopping at the store, like people knew what you were shopping for. Yeah. Now, there was the guys, you know, walking in with the garbage bags, you know, like obviously every once in a while, you know, you're making sure no one's following you back to your spots. You know, definitely been some break-ins with people getting tailed, you know, like the age old story. But we, I mean, everyone, I think by the time Michigan turned on an 8 and it got to be like 12 and 15, like, yeah, I mean, there were still raids going down. There's still municipalities that knew, like, you were kind of like pushing the limits of the medical, you know, program. But I mean, where this shop is, it's right outside Detroit. Detroit at that time didn't really have a police force. A lot of commercial growers, you know, heavy power.
Perfect, big perfect building. Place to grow.
Perfect.
Cheap place. Electric, cheap real estate.
Cheap water.
Yeah.
I mean, just
perfect.
Cheap buildings. I mean, I bought every building I own in the tax auction. I think my first one was about 22,000 square feet for $57,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, ideal place for growing weed back then.
That's what I tell people. It's like, if I wasn't born at the age I was to be like, okay, I'm going to take some risk, had no kids, you know, stacked up a little bread from the basements. My city was obviously struggling just to stay afloat, taking any, you want a property, go buy one, you know, the auction, logged on, drove around looking for all the heavy power coming off the poles, found a good building, logged on the tax auction that morning. And, you know, I think it started at like 25,000. The old owner was trying to buy it back and, he quit bidding at about like 55, and then I put it in for like 57, and that's the bid that stuck. And then,
do you feel like since the city was kind of going through a little bit harder times, they kind of left you a little more alone than usual?
Yeah, I mean, Detroit's a great city, but you know, when something's going down like that, they don't have the infrastructure to. I mean, they got bigger issues. You know, oh, you're buying a building to fix it up. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like, I mean, yeah, I don't want you know, stealing all the Hellcats in the world, chopping them up in there. But, you know, what are they going to say? All my neighbors, super cool with every building I've ever had. I completely renovate the properties, you know, respectfully, you know, do what we had to do there.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys are pretty good friends with Growing Pains.
Yeah. They're the homies.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you guys are also partners on retail.
Yeah. So we run Refinery Detroit under Tom started the refinery.
Okay.
They were actually cultivating for high tech early on and then, you know, wanted to kind of pursue their own brand and nothing was ever on paper or anything. We're like, cool, man. Like Tom and Seth, you know, I was in the Growing Pains on the west side, leading the pack over there for a long time. And they kind of split off. But yeah, we have a 3-store chain in Michigan that we, you know, I run Detroit, Tom runs the other two. You know, we talk every day and just make it happen.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, it's kind of, it really helps you stay vertical, which gives you an outlet to direct to the customer. And that changes the game for any cannabis cultivation or brand.
And, yeah. I think, and I'll talk on this, Tyler, and you can add to it. Cause he's actually, the funny thing is, you know, now he's a great cultivator. When we first got going down there, the only thing I was like, hey man, if you want to come work for me, like I got spots, but like, I need you to run my store. And he was like, I don't know. And I'm like, you know, let's just do it. You know? And I think now looking back, he'd tell you, it's probably one of the, from a cultivator standpoint, to learn the market and the customer base and what they want. And like, kind of gives you that third element of like, okay, I see how this is now. And us having, you know, as a company, having access to retail and all the different regions of retail, we kind of know what customers are looking for, you know, and price points and just all the little nuances that if you're just stuck under the lights all day in the grow, you never understand.
So Tyler, you ran the collective for a little while.
Yeah. So that was the first thing was he had both buildings. And at that time, there was no cultivation in Detroit, right?
No, Detroit.
Yeah.
If you got your store one night, they were like, they dropped basically like a letter and was like, hey, if you can meet these zoning requirements, we'll give you a license. We can give you like basically like a hybrid black, like gray market license. The state was about to go legal, but anyone that was currently operating got a chance to apply for a license. But if you were operating, so it could take you 2 years to get licensed, you could operate. Well, I saw the stipulations and I'm like, yo, I think our store might make it because we're kind of in a different area. We're kind of in an industrial area in Detroit. Yeah. And we applied. It was just an application, no background check, no nothing. Just had to meet these zoning requirements and you got a license. So we got that. But then shortly after that, Detroit messed something up. They were giving a few growers and processors licenses when they shouldn't have. So then the state made them take those licenses back and they had to redo their whole ordinance. So for about 18 months, the city, you couldn't apply for a license. So we actually had to just sit on our hands and run retail waiting to get the grow going. But in the meantime, we like white boxed out the building, all new roof, new doors,
did it right.
Got the place like it's as far as we could before we had to start pulling in internal permits.
Were you guys were one of the first metric facilities in Michigan?
Yeah, our dispensary, our medical number was 23.
Okay. You're right there in the
Our grow beginning. Opened up a little behind because of how Detroit didn't let us apply. And because we couldn't apply, we couldn't start building. So, you know, we were kind of behind the ball. But, you know, honestly, looking back and all this, it's like it's never a race. I mean, if you can be one of those companies that's early in, you can get those high pack prices. That's great. But normally that situation's kind of MSOE, kind of like different, and like they waste their money anyway. So it doesn't ever help them. But
yeah, I've seen that a lot. Sometimes, I mean, the first is not always the best.
And you're overpaying for property, licenses, you know, and then things change, and then they let other guys in, and then what you paid was like half of what that guy, and then, you know, there's that whole thing that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went up head to head with Lance versus Honey Banana at Proper Doinks. That was like straight out of the gate, not planned. They just put you head to head.
Yeah. So we, I saw they were doing the PSL leagues and I was like, oh man, like those guys, you know, I like what they're doing out there. I love their platform. I think they're good unbiased smokers, you know? And I was like, I came to him and I was like, yo, like, I think we should enter this. And that same day I hit up Tom. I'm like, yo, you should do this. And I think the first bracket was the, was it gas that we entered? Yeah, this was before this. So we kind of got our feet wet with our first bracket. We entered a good submission. Didn't go very far, but we were like, and then we saw the candy.
Dessert
come. Yeah. And we were like, oh, Lance is like a perfect kind of like different dessert. It was blowing. And then Tom at the time pulled his honey banana. And he's been harvesting that a couple times. And like, he's always like, yo, take some of this honey bee. It's smoking. And it always was, but like it never really got any of the respect because like it just looks kind of different in Michigan. Like there's a lot of candy.
I talked to him. It looks like outdoors.
Yeah. So like he'd always have it personally and we'd smoke and I'm like, that was sick, you know, but he never really like, he dropped a little bit of it into the market, you know, just kind of washed a lot of it. It was just kind of there. And then one day we both were entering and I think I was going over there to pick up something from his processing. And I was on the phone and I remember talking to him. I was like, hey, I just dropped it, you know, I'm sending my sample out. He's like, oh, me too. So I had like a little half ounce jar on me and I was like, hey, I'm about to come to you. Let's smoke. He's like, all right. So we get over there and he has his fresh batch, the same batches that was our same batch that we entered the Zah, right?
Yeah.
It was the same batch. He entered the Zah, the same in the proper smoke league.
So you guys, the same batch that went to proper.
Yes.
Went to Zah.
Yeah. They were both very close together.
Okay.
So then we got over there, rolled everything up, jumped in the truck with, Jason, their processor. And at that time, like, I don't think this will ever be duplicated because of the freshness of the flower and the batches, bro. We were smoking them side by side, passing them both at the same time. And it was like unreal. And I was like, yo, and we were both like, okay, you know, we have no problem saying like anything about each other's weed. You know, it's something I think as a mature grower, you got to be cool with like being like, is it smoking or is it not? And be honest, but they both were. And then it was weird because we didn't really know. We were like, yo, it's a coin toss. And depending on what terp you want. But I will say the honey bee at that time was blowing phenomenally for a banana strain. And it had a good coat. It was just different. You know, it was like just a different. It's a good like competition weed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so.
OK.
And then
it's different.
And then I gave him the rest of my jar. He gave me the rest of his jar. I brought it back and put it on his desk. I was like, yo, you got to smoke this against the Lance. And I think the next night you did. And
same thing. I was just like, they're both flame, you know? I mean, both were just so nice, you know, in their own way, but yeah, incredibly smooth, crazy flavor all the way through, you know, you get the mouth coat and the stain and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both fire.
So you got knocked out by your boys.
Yep. Yeah. So we go first round and like,
you got knocked out and you can't get it back. Cause you're out.
Yeah. 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 But I mean, like we both knew going in, like, listen, it's anyone's race, you know? And, they moved on and just tore that bracket up and scorched it, which, you know, I'm super happy, you know, like I'm just glad, you know, Michigan's starting to get some, you know, respect on the map, you know? And yeah, but it was a first round knockout, but it was just like, we got paired with it was like a one seed versus a one seed in the NCAA tournament first round. Like,
yeah.
All right. Someone has to lose, you know, unfortunately. And then, you know, we came back in the Zah, you know, and we got our award too. So yeah, it was cool to see it.
So you got, and then you come back in Zah, you won first place, best tasting, best overall, Then Growing Pains comes in second.
Yeah, on both of those.
Best tasting, best second best tasting, second best overall.
Yeah.
There's got to be some shit talking banter between you guys.
Come on. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we like, listen, like, I think at the end of the day, of course, you know, everyone wants to win, right?
Yeah.
So with the homies, I mean, they wouldn't be a homie if you can't talk shit and banter. But it, yeah, it's all in good fun. You know, we're just glad to be operating on the level we are as both companies and pushing and really the whole competition, like, Michigan, we all know each other in that box. You know, we're all the growers are pretty cool with everyone, you know, as far as I know. And, you know, it's good to have the competition pushing everyone. And, yeah.
It's great to see the kind of with Zaw and Proper Doings. They're not affiliated.
No.
But it gives some validity to where things are at when you're seeing Proper Doings, you know, pick, you know, something.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing it, what, a few weeks later at Zaw winning, you know, second place.
Yeah.
There as well. And it's cool that they're aligned, but yes, not together.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's really important because it's authentic at that point.
And I think with the second place on that Honey Bee, that box takes a while to produce, get out to the public, vote it on when they decide to smoke it. That Honey Bee seems to have a really fleeing terp. So if you get on it in those first 2 to 4 weeks of its life cycle after it's cut, way different than like a couple months later, where the Lance is almost the opposite. As that thing ages, almost like a Skittles, it gets like better. So like that was like, I guess when you start entering this stuff, you kind of got to know, hey, like, is this a quick turnaround tournament or is this
how's
like
this one cure?
Yeah. So I think the Lance really pulled ahead in like its ability to sit there and cure.
It's got a really good shelf life, it seems like.
It just kind of, as it ages gets well, a little bit better.
Yeah.
That's great. And that's probably, it could be exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I'd saw.
So you never know, the Michigan, that's voted on by the Michigan boxes. You know, I think they put out about 300 of them.
Yeah.
And they just go to everyone. So, you know, at that point, you're kind of open to the public and, you know, what people are thinking.
Yeah. How did you guys start growing? How long have you been in it? Were you in it for a while before legalization?
It went legal in like late 08, about 09. I broke my ankle at work and I couldn't wait work for a while. So I was just at home and I was like, hey, I think, you know, I want to build a grow room, you know, in my time while I'm chilling. So I, you know, brought in some contractors, built it. Had a good partner at the time and made some connections, got right into like Coco and, you know, really kind of fast tracked. Like my learning curve was pretty quick and like figuring out and just got obsessed with it and just reading on the forums and just absorbing information, flying everywhere, coming out here to, you know, go to the Emerald Cup up north to grab genetics, started like, you know, popping seeds and.
You got into popping seeds and breeding quick.
Early. Yeah.
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 A lot of guys don't do that. I mean, it seems like the most trend is just buy clones, grow weed.
My first harvest was all seed, an all fem seed run of two different flavors.
Whoa.
Yeah. So like, that's just what I decided to do. And I remember it was Dynafem. Is that a seed company?
Yeah. Dynafem.
It was their Blue Widow and then this ice cream cake cross. And at the time, like, I'll never forget it. And I remember like seeing the difference in the plant structure. Like I knew nothing at this time. I just thought like, oh, someone gives you a clone, it's going to be a banger, you know, a banger genetic. Takes a couple of years to realize there's levels to genetics, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting that you came in that way because so many people don't.
Yeah. That was just, I remember we drove, so Detroit borders Canada. We drove over there to buy beans and we were like, hi, like at that time it was, you know, you cross an international border. It wasn't crazy, but that day, I remember we looked up where they were being sold at and went over there, grabbed them, and then just came right back and germed them, popped them. Yeah.
That's dope. What about you, Tyler? How'd you?
Yeah, same. 2012, like I was living in South Carolina doing work down there and moved back up here and started growing right away. Same thing. I was just buying seeds and popping seeds. You know, it was crazy. I remember my first couple runs, I actually found some heaters and didn't know how to clone back then. So, you know, things got away that shouldn't have.
But you didn't know how to clone back then.
No, the same thing. I know what I was doing. You know, I just bought some grow books and started doing it. Hand watered for a while. And then I got an Instagram and found the Jungle Boys. And that's changed everything for me. So everybody I knew was like, you know, back then the most you could have was like 72 plants. So like larger growers were doing like, you know, 36 light rooms or 72 light rooms, one plant per, you know, hand water it once a day or whatever. I started building irrigation systems, growing in rock wool, just doing anything I could see commercial guys doing. You
were getting that from following Ivan?
Yeah. I was just like watching the commercial dudes and knowing someday this is going to go that direction, you know? So I had a small basement grow, just like a six lighter, and it was always just playing around with different tech, new nutrients. You know, I worked at the store, so they gave me everything to try out all the time. So I just a lot of fast track towards lots of different techniques and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Sweet.
He was the first to put it out there like that.
Yeah.
I remember first seeing those because I had been growing a long time, not a long time, but definitely like 5-6 years.
Yeah, long enough.
Or so long enough to understand, you know, how to get my own way. And then you see Ivan start posting and you're like, whoa, dude, this is completely different than what I'm doing. Like,
yeah,
just sharing everything. It was a game changer.
Yeah. So I started copying him. Who's the other one? Don Juan Mattis. He was really big back then too, you know, or Lone Tree nowadays. Used to follow a lot of what he was doing too.
Nice. Yeah. That's cool. You kind of bounced around. You were on Athena and then you switched off and you went to some other lines. And then how long ago did you guys start using Athena again?
Probably almost a year and a half ago.
Okay. Yeah. What was it to be completely transparent?
100%.
You know, what was it that made you switch off?
Yeah. So
just speak the truth.
No, I'm going to be 100% honest with you, bro. So, 2020 is when we started the commercial side, getting that going. I think like back then what I thought of what was good weed. And I think even with Bill says what we thought was good weed, we were off. You know what I mean? Like there's levels, you know, so you get your hands on some stuff that's smoking. You're like, holy shit, you know? So it's like trying to figure out how to get to that and wasn't there. And back then everybody cardboard terps from Athena, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was like, that was, you know, I guess probably the first thing that was on the list of, well, let's see if another nutrient does better for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Him and I spoke about it and I was like, listen, like if this is like the rhetoric that's getting pushed, like, it almost makes sense to like go with a different company just as like, you know, everyone's always in your comments say, oh, this and that. And like,
oh, Athena weed,
you know? So I was like, listen, like we kind of understood, you know, nutrients, but like, was like, all right, let's just try something different. So we're not kind of thrown into that, like, you know,
bucket.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, back then it was like you said, it was like, I never really believed that nutrients caused the problem, but also wasn't sure because we couldn't get where we wanted to be. You know what I mean? So it's like, well, I guess we got to try whatever we can try. And yeah, started going through other things and, you know, wasn't getting any different results, you know? So then it kind of came down to, okay, there's something with the cultivation techniques that we're doing, something somewhere along the line where things aren't going exactly like, you know, that we're looking for.
And then what made you, you know, transition back?
Come back. We'll say inconsistencies in other companies, you know, with Athena in the last year and a half, I mean, everything is stable. It's always on point. The bags weigh the same and you can tell because the EC always comes out the same, you know? So what we was having some issues with other companies, all of a sudden you have some problems with your irrigation, can't figure out why, you know, you go back and forth about what's causing the problem. And so I just decided to go back and give you guys a try again. And it's been A1 ever since, you know? So then obviously found out that it was what I was doing in the garden, not what the Athena was doing for us, you know? Cause obviously we're growing fire with Athena. Growing Pains is doing it. I mean, there's a lot of people smashing with Athena right now.
Yeah. Exactly what you just said is why Ivan wanted to create Athena, is cause you got to think a guy like Ivan, he's got 4,000 lights. His entire business is relying on some brand that he's feeding his plants.
Yeah.
And he was seeing a lot of inconsistencies, a lot of imbalances. Mm-hmm. And that's when he was like, look, let's do this. I gotta control my destiny. Cause Jungle Boys is number one. Like Jungle Boy's to him, you know, it's his baby.
Yeah.
He's got to protect his baby and he needs something that he could feed consistent, reliable, and grows fire. And well,
bro, I mean, there's like so many variables to this. You know what I mean? We're trying to basically be God indoors, you know? It's like we're creating the weather and we're creating everything for these plants. It's like, I mean, anything that you can make as consistent as possible, you know? And that's where, good nutrients is it. And then finding along the way is that, you know, like you guys have your own manufacturing. So I think what a lot of people don't understand is like elements are elements, right? And the majority of the elements that make these fertilizers only come from a handful of places around the world, you know? So it's like when you're manufacturing, that's where it comes to good manufacturing processes, QC and the consistency. And I think if you don't have your own manufacturing like you guys do, then probably a lot of that kind of stuff kind of slips through the cracks, you know?
If you're not making it, you can't control it.
Right.
You have no idea if they've switched an input, you know, sub couldn't get one source mineral and then got a same, you know, kind of mineral, different source. Right. And that completely changes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Changes things. So
no, it's like, I mean, you buy your fertilizer and all of a sudden it's a different color this time. You know, you're like, well, what happened? You know?
Yeah. I heard you're nervous coming back.
I'm coming back to Athena.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit, you know, just, I guess, hoping that things were going to work out and that the cardboard terps thing wasn't a thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But obviously it's not. So here you are. Stoked, man.
Here you are. First, just swept.
And I'm kind of the one like in the business, like, you know, I steer this thing from about 30,000 feet every day and specialize in like marketing and sales. Like, you know, I'd say he's the gardener keeping the building, you know, mechanically running, you know, hiring, blah, blah, blah. But I'm a headache to him because I'm always like, yo, let's try heavy 16. Let's try house and garden. Like I hear them boys up in SAC are on this house and garden tip with this and this. And like eventually, you know, when we've really worked at this to like figure this craft out, you know, we're not happy. Like I'm not happy until it's perfect. Right. And I think that's what led us to get to this pinnacle. But at the same time, he's trying to weed through all these things I'm throwing at him. Like, you know, I just come running in the office and I'll be like, yo, dude, I was talking to so-and-so, you know.
So you and I are similar personalities.
Yeah, I'm like, he's like the yin to my yang. He's like, all right, dude, like, well, let's talk about it later. You know, like knowing like, just chill out, you know, eat some lunch, like whatever. But at the time, like, you know, we're going through everything, right? Like we're like, we're trying to run a business that's currently operating, you know, brand it, keep running, be, you know, here in the market, and that, you know, you need that product has to hit, right? You know, there's a lot of really good smokers in Michigan that, you know what's what. And, you know, as a cultivator, you're trying to figure out what's the best way to put out a consistent, really, I'm really big on consistencies, you know, like my flower, I want it to be the same, you know, boom, boom, boom. You know, like I come from the restaurant world and you're only as good as your last table, you know? So every day, you know, every batch, it's like, you're only as good as your last batch. So, you know, if you're inconsistent, you're never going to build a real brand. And, you know, consistency is really what we build on. And, you know, he is able to take all of that and decipher through it, like, you know, in a scientific method, say, okay, well, this has stayed constant, this has changed, okay, environment affects this, you know, a lot of help along the way with all the homies out there in the grow world. You guys know who you are. You know, just kind of checking things off the box,
a big factor for you guys, because the community's strong, especially with the Athena growers. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of collaboration, communication, ideas, and stuff that you guys are collaborating on. Do you see that being a big benefit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the guys over there at Mitten Master, you know, Mobile J. I mean, you know those guys. I mean, they're always doing their thing, you know, out in the barns and buildings. You know, we're down in the city. You know, you got Seth and Tom over there. I mean, Urban Farmer, you know, all the guys, everyone. I mean, we're all trying to be the best we can be. You know, there's really... the market's big, you know, we all got a few hundred lights and, you know, it's just kind of doing our thing. But yeah, I mean, definitely there is, like, I guess you could say, some camaraderie amongst the Athena growers, you know, or anyone, you know, really.
You almost have to. It's like everybody hates us, you know, so they want to do is talk shit because you're using Athena.
Right? Yeah, yeah, but you're out there winning everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I just looked at, I didn't even realize, I looked at, I think 90% of the guys that won at ZAW, we're all running Athena.
Right.
I'm just like, bro, that's out of control.
Mm-hmm.
That's out of control.
I mean, I think if you look at water,
I don't think it's just the nutrients though. I think it's the camaraderie. It's like that you guys are always achieving, trying to achieve something better. You guys are working together. Like, just like I was just talking to Steve with Mitten Gardens and you guys are boys and that all, you guys are all communicating and figuring out, hey, how can we get better? You know? And it's not the product, it's the process. Yeah, the majority of the time. I mean, you found that out.
100%.
Yeah.
No, it's cool. I mean, we have a lot of competition amongst each other, but it's friendly as fuck, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
We'll see.
So you were using RO, but now you're using tap?
Yeah. Yeah. We, the amount of pH up was having to use was causing, I think, I don't know, it's hard to say, because kind of got off the pH up in the RO water right around the time we switched back to Athena. So we're just having issues with fallout, and it'd be really random. And all of a sudden, disc fillers are plugged up, you know, the tanks are full of crystals at the bottom. And, you know, I don't know, it just caused a lot of issues up and down. So we have really
on the previous nutrient lines you were running.
Yeah. Yes. And using the RO water. So, we have excellent tap water in Detroit, you know, it's really low PPM. We just pulled the ROs, went back to tap water. That takes out the need for the pH up and, I haven't had any issues ever since.
So you're just using Pro Line with cleanse.
Yep.
No balance.
No balance.
You don't need it if you have. And saying, are you using a little bit of pH down?
Depends on the season. So this time of year, I don't need it. Wintertime, I do need it. So that input or that incoming water chemistry is changing a little bit, you know, from season to season.
Okay. And you're in cocoa?
Yep. Yeah. Cocoa perlite.
What size pots?
2 gallons.
2 gallons.
Yeah.
And drip emitters?
Yep.
Netafim?
Yep. Netafim 0.3s, 2 per pot.
Okay. And have you tested, you know, perlite versus no perlite?
Yeah, we ran straight cocoa for a long time. We tried like the crush pots, you know, the hydrate, hated those and went to just pots, like, you know, hard pots with loose fill cocoa, did that for a long time. But the plants got bigger. Like when we went to under canopy lighting, same amount of plant density significantly increased our yield. So these plants got bigger, thirstier, and the 1 gallons I was in wasn't enough. Then we went to 2s. Going from clone right to a 2 gallon of straight cocoa was a really slow, weird veg. So I was like, all right, I'm going to have to do something to get some more aeration, faster drybacks. And so we went to the cocoa and perlite. So at first was 50-50. And then that ended up not being enough water holding capacity. So I went to 70-30. And that's been working out pretty good.
And that found a sweet spot.
Yeah.
And you're just using the standard nursery 2 gallons.
Yep.
Rounds.
Yep. Filled all the way up. Yeah.
Okay. Simple. Keep it simple.
Yeah. Super easy.
Transplanting clones straight into the 2.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
we noticed the jam. Getting in that perlite, we're getting a bushier, branchier plant.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I mean, one of those mysteries, like, you know, listen, we read, we try to be scientists, we're not, you know, but something with perlite gives just a really nice structure on like a whole broad range of genetics. I don't know. Remember when we were like, yo, like,
yeah, that's just interesting. Like,
nothing, no really other changes, you know. I mean, yeah, maybe a bigger pot, obviously, they can get wider, but
yeah, but then you know, it's hard to control a bigger pot.
So it was cool to see, like, with the perlite, one of the benefits was like a really nice structured plant versus like the 100% cocoa. I don't know if it was just the plant staying wetter feed or what, but we're getting much more uniform branches and tops.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's hard too, you know, as we're doing about roughly 300 plants per room, you know, it's like to get 300 perfect clones is pretty impossible. So it seemed like the weaker ones in the straight cocoa, it would just like exacerbate the problem. You know, they always stayed a lot smaller versus in the perlite. Seems like I can get them to even out a little bit better.
Yeah, like waterlogged.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
With, you guys are using under canopy, what brand?
Favens.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so when I had Tom and Seth on, they're talking like, 4.2, like even possibly sometimes 5. I'm like, you know, those are big numbers.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at?
Right around the same. I mean, across all the strains, we're about 3.8 would be the average, you know.
Okay.
Candies, you know, somewhere close to 4 most of the time, you know, 3.6 to 4. Have definitely broke 5 multiple times on some other strains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane.
If we didn't have to really run the designer cuts, I mean, I could have a whole garden of 5 pound of light plants. I mean,
yeah,
you know, but and there is that strategy depending what you're trying to do, but it's just, you know, the strains that are the genetics that people are asking us to grow, basically, you know, they're not the ones that'll, I mean, you can get up there, but yeah, there's a limit. And then smokeability, you can keep blowing these plants out, but you're going to, we ride that fine line between, you know, smokeability, performance, and yield, you know, which will sacrifice yield for more smokeability and performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I think there was a minute. I mean, we were closer to a 4+ average, you know, but we've kind of went back a little bit because it was like them canopies were just really thick, really dense. And even with the under canopies, it just seemed like you're still finding some parts of the plant that weren't as mature as the top and now the bottom, you know?
So you scaled back on plant count?
Plant count's the same, just manicuring a little bit different early on so that there's not as much branching. No, same amount of veg time. You know, it's like, say a plant's got 10 nodes on it, we might actually remove one or two of them instead of leaving them all there. So it's just not as full of a canopy.
What's your veg time?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. And probably finishing at what, depending on genetic, 3 or 4 feet?
Yeah, about four. Yeah, a little over four is probably about the average.
Okay. And what were you guys pulling before under canopy?
Before, I'd say overall average is 2.5 a light, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what kind of we've seen too.
Yeah, I'd say a solid pound of light extra. And I mean, we also changed up a lot too. I mean, back then, before the under canopies, we were actually vegging for 3 weeks with the same size plants, you know, or the same amount of plants per light. Doing more of like the topped with a hedge type looking canopy, lollipopped really, really high. So the plants would actually be a whole foot taller than what they are now and still not even really yielding that much.
But and when we creating got, what much more work?
Yeah, a ton of work. I mean, incredible amount of labor on the plant maintenance. But yeah, right around the time we got the Favens going, met Tim, obviously, and then his buddy Alex, you know, that's obviously part of the team now too, met him, and he was kind of giving me some tips. He was like, you know, why don't you try not topping, flip these things smaller and see what happens. So, I mean, it's like literally at the same time. So I think like the combination of how, you know, was manicuring, shorter veg time, added the under canopies, and then, yeah, that added that whole pound of light at least.
Are you seeing topping is dependable on genetic?
100%. Yeah, because, I mean, everything for us is on a schedule, you know, so we got little ones, we got tall ones. So kind of the method is right now, nothing gets topped at all until we flip, or maybe like a day or two before flower, and then, like, the really tall ones might get topped at that time. Or if I have, like, a good amount of variation with on a table, you know, I got 100 clones and 75 of them are strong, 25 are weak. Those 25 might not get topped, but then the other ones do.
Okay, so you only top after you flip.
Right, like day one.
Okay, yeah. Day one. Yeah. All right. But you that first week, you make sure everything's topped out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but is there certain genetics that you know not to top?
It's really just dependent on size, you know. Okay. Like Lance is one we're gonna top. It gets taller, you know. Our Los Muertos cut, usually top that one. But at this point now, there's only
depending
a couple
on
of them.
Finish size.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you gotta kinda know where your genetics gonna finish before because you're doing that week one. Yeah. So that top slows the growth.
Yeah.
Focus branches out and then
we kind of found on accident too, I had to do it. And this is how I found this. Normally when we top, it'd be like, say day 7, day 9 of veg or something. Right. And you know, it's like you take, like, if you leave like 5 or 6 nodes, then, you know, they're really tight together like this. And then it kind of grows out.
Yeah.
Found that if you just let it kind of just grow up to, you know, its normal height, the nodes are spaced out and then you take the tip off. Well, now it kind of grows out more opened up, if you will, you know,
explain that. So
it was like, I remember watching, who was it? Was it Theolite or somebody? I can't remember. There was a book that showed you about how to mainline, right? So you top your plant like day 7 and you'd have like 4 nodes.
Yeah.
Stretch them out north, south, east, west. Well, then those main branches were really, really tight. And it seemed like for whatever reason, the plant just grew differently that way than if you waited later to top it and then top it down to like maybe 6 or 7 nodes or whatever. And then everything's more opened up and kind of like grows more spaced out. Yeah, so you're seeing
a better reaction when you top later.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't really heard that.
Yeah. Because it's like, I mean, you could go in most of our rooms now and you would think nothing's been topped, but there are some that have been topped. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like a completely different look if you top later versus sooner.
Gotcha. Yeah. Are you with kind of like your EC, are you running a solid 3 EC? Mm-hmm. And then what are you managing? Your runoff, are you checking your runoffs?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you like to usually see on on runoff?
I mean, I'll be honest, with runoff, I'm literally checking more for volume than I am anything.
Really?
I definitely care somewhat about the pH because it seems like I've correlated. If it's really, really low, that seems to translate into things that you don't really want to see on the finish side of it. EC wise, it's off the meter. I don't know what it is.
What do you mean by that on the finish side?
It just seemed like, and again, I mean, this could be correlating to just, you know, years ago when things weren't blowing as good as they are right now, but it seemed like if that pH runoff would be really low, like in the fours, like low fours or something, it seemed like the plants weren't as healthy. They didn't finish as good. Maybe didn't smoke as good or something like that. So now it's like, you know, input going in at six, as long as I'm somewhere in the fives, you know, I'm usually pretty happy with what's going on with the plants. And then, like I said, the EC, I don't even know. My meter goes up to six and it's usually above that. So,
wow.
But then it's like the substrate sensors, they don't suggest that you're even at six, you know? So I kind of got away from worrying about the runoff as much, you know, because it's like the bottom of the pots are salty. The table's salty. There's salt everywhere. So it's like, how much is that runoff being influenced by water just running over that salt, collecting some more, and now giving you a number that's not really 100% accurate?
I could see that 100%.
So, but I do like to make sure that I'm hitting 15% or 20% or 25%, because that definitely seems to have correlated with plant health, keeping the EC and the substrate where I want to see it, you know, throughout that 9-week cycle.
You got to be really in touch with your room, I think, a little bit to be able to gauge that, right, on runoff. Mm-hmm. Like on your, you know, 15, 20% runoff, you really got to understand your room.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important to touch on.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, you know, each table's got somewhere around 70 plants on it. I only have one sensor per, but, you know, I definitely like to check multiple plants and see.
Do you really even use the sensor that much or what?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, big time.
Yeah.
What are you using?
The Arroyas and the Taros 12s.
Okay. Yeah. And you're checking it daily.
I mean, I would die without those things, you know, really? I mean, not necessarily die. It's just, it makes life easier because I mean, at this point I feel like I got a solid rhythm with what I'm doing. So this is just like another set of eyes 24/7. Let me know that everything's where I'm expecting it to be, you know, obviously it's great for when a solenoid dies, you know, you get the alert that the plants need some water cause they didn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many lights are you running?
It's 375.
Yeah. Yeah,
375 HPS.
Bloom lights.
Yeah. So nice. I mean,
yeah, split up over like 11 rooms. So we got like 10 production rooms, one R&D room where we're always running new seeds, looking for new phenos.
Are you doing true side-by-side in the R&D or just pheno hunt?
Right now it's just pheno hunting.
Okay. Yeah. That's what you're focused on R&D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's basically a smaller, it's like a, I think we run 36 lighters. It's like a 28 lighter, but it's HPS, same equipment. So when we're hunting, we know how it's going to perform under our lights. Like I do believe and think that, you know, if you're a mixed light guy, you're an LED guy, you're an HPS guy, you need to be hunting the plants under their conditions. Cause I think certain plants just, you know, you take a clone from an LED guy and he's getting this kind of result. I mean, I think you can get it close, but whatever, you know, everything's just those little tweaks just change things. And so we do the R&D more for the genetics versus like equipment, but We are interested in running some mixed light and stuff in the future.
What lights are you guys running?
We have Nanolux on the old side, and then
LEDs or HPS.
We're all HPS,
bro. I mean, dude, I hear it over and over again, man. Yeah. HPS.
Yeah.
Everybody, all the guys that are winning these things,
it's HPS.
HPS.
I don't know. I mean, the light thing is you know, I've seen really good LED weed. I've seen really good LEC weed mixed light. I've seen LEC LED. I've seen LEC HPS. You know, I've seen everything. I just think I like the look, the feel, the breakdown, the smokeability of HID. But I could just be like an old boomer. You know, I mean, maybe we're excited. I don't know how many people have ran mixed light. I know there's some boys in Michigan crushing with it. But I don't think how many guys have really, really, really dove in, put their head on it and tried to like figure it out. You know, same with LEDs. You know, I think the LED craze really hit right about the time weed was starting to get real, like, you know, commercial in Michigan and, you know, a lot of big facilities and things. So I don't know, you know, it's. Yeah.
But, I mean,
I got a little four light hobby garden at the crib, you know, LEDs, and I can't, I mean, the same cuts that we run at the shop, yeah. I can't do the same thing with the LEDs. So I don't know.
You can't get it smoking like what you're smoking. I mean,
it
might
be smoking fine, but it don't look the same, or, you know, it's usually don't feel. Look the same, feel the same. Structure will be a little bit different on it. Now this past when I got some drying right now, I used some far reds and it came out significantly different than anything I've ever done with those LEDs. So we'll see.
With the far red tech, yeah, like yeah. Mid-Master and Mobile J.
Yeah, 5 minutes at the end of the day, and that was it. And I mean, the plants were done faster, more color. It's on the Lance, actually. So be able to see how this performs, you know, compared to these runs that we've been pulling out of the shop.
But you can't, you know, the LED, I mean, we are basically mixed spectrum because we do run, we got the R6s.
R6s,
so yeah. It's a blue LED underneath our red. So, and there has been a noticeable.
What do you mean, a blue
The Faven R6 is an LED strip of blue light.
But it's blue.
Yeah, heavier on the blue versus the R8s are heavier on the red.
So it kind of offsets our red over the top. And we have seen more oil, more smell, just an overall healthier plant with the under canopies.
Yeah.
With the RA or
R6s.
Yeah. Have you tried the higher red?
We haven't, not yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've heard people are trying that though with HPS and still running the R8s underneath too.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. That's interesting.
Here's about the chromas. That's one. I was just talking with Alex last week. Yeah, he's got me kind of hype. I'm going to have to try a side-by-side.
Do a row of it. Yeah. See how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about CO2? You guys are, what's your CO2 process?
As far as like levels or whatever?
Yeah, levels. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 1200 PPM. Yeah,
so I just keep it.
I run 800 during veg, 800 during stretch, and then, I'm sorry, just 800 during veg and then flip over to 1200.
Flower?
Yeah, for flower.
And then
taper off a little bit at the end too.
How does that taper look?
Start in the last couple of weeks when I start to, you know, try to get the EC, down a little bit in the substrate at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys pheno hunt the Lance?
No, that's from Ridgeline Farms.
Yeah, shout out Ridgeline.
Oh, Ridgeline.
Yeah, that's Ridgeline's cool baby, bro. Yeah, he's super cool. Got to talk to him since, you know, all this has been going on. He's cool as fuck.
Yeah, I talked to him on the phone not too long ago. Yeah. I don't know if it's him or somebody else that's running some R&D trials for us.
Okay.
On some stuff that we have.
Nice.
But yeah, he's a cool cat. I talked to him once.
Yeah.
But a lot of lifetime work in the genetics, you know, that Lance, you could tell when I spoke to him, you know, it's He put a lot of time into that plant, you know, so definitely respect to the guys that create these genetics and, you know, everything they bring to the game too.
Yeah. 100%. You guys are pheno hunting consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you working with Ridgeline at all on anything else?
Officially? No, but yeah, definitely starting to talk about it for sure.
Working together more. Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, are you keeping that R&D room consistently full of new pops? Like how many seeds are you guys popping on a, you know, that'd be like a quarterly or a bi-monthly
We're getting about four flips a year out of there on the phenos. We'll start with about 300 seeds or so. And then,
you guys are doing real pops.
Kind of wild ones too. It's like, I like to let all the cultivation guys get in on everything. So, I mean, this dude's got a collection that's insane. So, as everybody gets to go through, pick a pack or two, and then we run them, you know. So it's wild, man. We'll have like giant sativas going and little tiny, you know, whatever's going at the same time. It's crazy. But
you're a collector.
Yeah, I'm a genetic. Like, I think I got issues. I still I'll still see a seed drop and be like, I got to get it. And like, you know, you get the FOMO and like, I backed off a little bit after kind of like doing all these big pops. You kind of see like, I think that's the last thing that the curtain's going to get pulled back on in this industry is like the inconsistencies in some of these breeders, you know, or like, what are they actually putting out? You know, there's some great ones out there. I don't know. You see just a lot of weird, just you're like, what? This is supposed to be this and this. And like, I just went through two packs and found like nothing that even resembles either parent or like, you know, anything even remotely, like, and listen, it is what it is. It's all a gamble. You know, you're just buying lottery tickets. But I think the next phase for us too is going to be in-house breeding. You know, we're going to do some reversals and eventually probably step into like some deeper lines and, you know, pollen and everything. Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Genetics are going to be the future. You know, it's what Michigan, we're all getting bottlenecked with the same candies, the same sherbs, the same, you know, this and this from Seed Junkie, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we're really, you know, 2026, we're going to take pheno hunting out of our current facility, and we're gonna open a 60 lighter, 10 six 10 light rooms potentially for just constant pheno hunting. You know, I think I'd rather put
and breeding
effort into all that and be able to, you know, create the plants that are special. That's where, like, when you can throw out a menu every week to these stores and these buyers and it's just different, but still fire, that's where you can really start to build traction. But it's going to be a 2 to 3 year process. So you got to start now.
Yeah. You get to make your own collections.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's got to be
excited.
Special for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I,
and you too, but you know,
yeah,
it seems like he's a collector.
Yeah.
I just 100%. Like, I mean, he sees me. I light up when I go in the pheno hunt room. It's just cool being able to pop seeds. And like, it's like, I love gambling. So like, you know, whatever. And it's like, that's basically what you're doing, but you're doing it with weed. And then to see all the different plants come out and the potential and like knowing you might have that new, you know, that new thing, that's it, you know, or creates a way for a while, you know, and that's fun.
Going throughout the years and buying and popping a lot of different phenos, do you have a favorite, you have some favorite breeders that you've worked with?
Yeah. We actually have a Los Muertos cut that does really well in Michigan. Michigan likes gas, you know, and it's motor breath times 4516. That was from Lit Farms. They seem to be doing a really good job. Seed Junkie, we found some heat in his packs. Sin City, actually, I love the Blue Power. I think a lot of these guys are doing some really good work. Who else? Where else have we found?
Yeah,
some
stuff? Lit's been huge. I mean, we just found some more stuff. We got that pineapple thing I showed you. You know, Mittmaster, Bean Fiends.
Fiends in Michigan.
Our latest one we got, Candy Cartel. We got from the hunting those packs. Nice. Super fire.
Nice.
Yeah. Detroit Seed Company, he actually took our head stash, the pink runts, and crossed it to the perm marker. He's a local guy that's known for his strawberry phenos. And we actually just tested a pheno this morning. Our breakfast doobie was perm times strawberry truffles. And it has potential. Definitely had power. Put me to sleep. He had to wake me up. We were late because I was sleeping. I went back to sleep. I could feel it as soon as
you
we started.
You think it has like Lance potential or?
No, I mean, Lance is a special plant, bro. Yeah. Like, I don't know why it's not bigger in California. You know, like, we have it out there and it's like kind of creating waves in our community. And I'm like, I guess it's technically candy. So maybe it kind of like hit the end of the candy wave where people were kind of candied out here, but they're not. So like, I don't know if it's like the licensing issues with it or like why it's not bigger and everyone's, you know, roto out here. Cause it's different. Like, you know, we got some for you guys, you know.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it's
do you have it here?
Yeah, right here. We got the plant, you know, we got the cut, you know, shout out Bea Green Wolf, you know, Joe at LA Family Farms made that happen. And we ran one plant, a couple plants, but we're like, oh, this is different, this is cool, put in a row, harvested it. Then we started blowing it. We're like, man, this is like really unique, you know, and then Zaw was like a few months away and then we were like, all right, we're going to make a run at Zaw with this thing and then got it in heavy rotation. And now it's doing its thing.
This is the batch that was in the Zaw. I mean, at this point, that's about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months old almost.
Oh, this batch is?
Yeah. And this is another one from a few months ago. I mean, still a lot of nose, a ton of flavors.
For 4 or 5 months. Smooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot. Dude, actually, the one that's 4 months old has...
It's weird.
It's
different.
Got a little bit more nose than the new one.
It does that. I told you.
Are you sure you didn't switch them up?
No, man, I promise.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy. She's an ager.
It'll do that because, like, he knows I'm the most critical person and he'll bring me the new batch and I'll be like, I don't know if it's as good. And then I'll leave it on my table for, like, 2 or 3 weeks and I'll hit him up and, like... I'll be like, bro, I don't know if like I was sick or just had dry mouth when I smoked it, but this thing's like blowing. Like I didn't.
The Zabatch, you didn't even like
the
that
Zabatch
much.
I didn't like, bro. Like I was like, fuck, bro. We're about to enter just some like whatever weed in the Zab again. And like, I didn't like the rosin. And listen, I have high expectations. Like I unfortunately have this thing. I don't know where like, I don't know. I just like things to be perfect. But by the time it got time to send out, I was like, yo, this right. Like it was about 2 or 3 weeks later. I was like, this is blowing. So,
I mean, she's not a looker.
No. She looks cool, but
she's cool.
Not crazy. Not crazy.
It's interesting. Like the honey bananas is not a looker.
Yeah.
And this is, it's just, you wouldn't open this bag of weed and be like, whoa.
Yeah.
No. We actually, I had some people grab some Lance a couple days ago, and on IG, I saw they were posting like, oh, it's like, hey, or this, it looks like this. And it's like, yeah, but smoke it. So, yeah, but it's not. I don't know, this dude he has issues or something, but
there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
But that's pretty interesting. I mean, you're talking about the two top genetics that won at ZAW right now, and both of them are not. I mean, this probably looks better than the honey banana.
Yeah.
But it's not a looker.
No. I mean, it's when it's fresh and undisturbed, I mean, it's obviously a lot prettier, but I mean, at that point, that's been beat up and tossed around and everything else.
But is it a looker when it is fresh? No.
Looker? No, absolutely not.
Yeah. No. It's interesting.
Yeah. There's something, when you're running a metric company or anything, you got to check all the boxes, and like a lot of people smoke with their eyes, that'll always be a thing. You know, it is what it is. Like,
Well, and I like pretty weed too.
We all like pretty weed. But I mean, it's unfortunate. We'll run plants in our pheno rooms and like, it'll smoke. And we're like, yo, we really can't run this, because when you put it up on that top shelf where we are in Michigan, we have we just like you guys in Prop 215 used to have deli. We have deli. So they'll put, some green Z up there, and like our customer base just isn't there yet or doesn't understand it. I don't know what the disconnect is, but it'll run against some super purple, candy that just isn't even blowing. It's so purple, and that candy will outsell it 10-1.
Just because that way it looks.
Yeah, it's just the way it looks, purple, shiny.
And the bulk's tough. Everybody can see it. I think you can get away with stuff a little bit better when it's in a bag like this. And
they trust that you're giving them hey, smoke this. And then it's branded. It's the consumer that's looking for an experience. They're not just going to judge on its look and, maybe initial smell. And they're like, oh, okay. Like I see what this is now.
I keep hearing that over and over. Purple weed's not smoking.
Something that I think I spearheaded at the grow. I'm like, I don't know, man. I smoke a lot of weed from a lot of people. And I've just noticed it's not like a definitive rule, but if too much of the tissue throughout is like purple, it's almost like it's past its prime, which makes sense. So it's like drier, it breaks down different, in the grind. But you still got to have color to sell. Unfortunately, we have a consumer base that has demands that we have to meet. So, something he's getting really good at is dialing in that last end of life, 10 to 14 days, and being able to get color on the outside, but not on the inner tissue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, in the Michigan market, it's probably, I've been there quite a few times and I've been to a few events there, and the culture is ridiculously strong. Like there's just so much cannabis culture in that market. How is the market as far as like in general as a profitability standpoint?
I mean, you're talking, there's probably 3 to 5 companies right now operating the way we do. And when I say that, I'm going to say anyone over 250 lights. Cause when you're below 150 lights, you're dropping so irregular, you can sell out to one chain, or whatever, I love the guys too, that have the smaller drops, they matter, but it's hard for them to get into the bigger stores cause they don't have enough. So when I'm saying these things today, it's more of like the guys that have over 300 lights, 250 lights kind of puts you in that almost every 2 week harvest cycle. So you have to, your stuff has to be leaving the shelf to for the buyers to buy more, So it's not just, I have a month in between harvests, and then, you don't even like the weed's just gone just naturally. So the market's good, man. As long as you're operating the right way. Now, if you're just producing biomass and you're running some Oreos and you're running some, Mac One and whatever else, like those strains are great. There's people that enjoy them. We ran those cuts, at one point, just the market's ever changing. But it's strong, if you're branded and you're behind the brand and you're taking care of little issues that arise and you're out there marketing and you're doing the full nine, it's cool. But we got in early. So like now you're coming in to some guys that are about to cut your head off. So I think what people forget is everyone gets these grand like schemes in their brain. Like, oh, I'm going to go set up 1,000 lights. Okay. But they have no other part of the business figured out. No branding, no marketing. You know, they might have some connections, some sales, you know, their maybe strains, some
connections to their genetics.
Genetics might be okay.
Yeah. But they're not continuously pheno hunting.
Yeah. The one thing I tell people is like, start with 100, 150 lights, build into your brand, get the momentum. So you don't have this rush of packs coming that you have to dish, and you got bills and you got overhead and you got labor. Then you kind of force yourself into making a move that, you know, isn't the move you normally make. Plus, who's really ready to take on that? You know, there's very few guys in this country. I mean, I know some really good cultivators that I could put into this bucket, but like, you take 1,000 lighter down, you got to have a team ready. You know, you need all the way through. Like, if you want to, I think, win ZAR, get to that level of weed, you got to be able to, from propagation all the way to that hitting a Mylar or a jar, you got to be able to execute, which means you have people in there that you have to trust and know your routine and know what's going on and the whole mechanicals and the whole growing and trim room and everything all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And it seems like you really got to have your finger on the pulse of what you're putting out and the consistency and the quality. And it seems like it has to be, you know, from leadership. You know, it's got to be driven by leadership.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Because you kind of, you know, maybe some leadership's focused on finance or growing the business, or they're focused on, you know, something other than the product that they're putting out. And it's a distraction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Tyler can speak on this, but my biggest thing is, as long as we have great weed and the right genetics, nothing else matters. I'm not going to step over I'm not going to step over a dollar to pick up a nickel. I'm not going to worry about, hey, what are we paying for this? Like, you know, like, let's get some under canopies ripping and, you know, run the right genetics and get the weed right. Like, I'd rather focus on how can I get an extra, and I'm going to say this lightly, and he's going to go, yeah, fuck off. How can I get an extra half pound of light versus how can I extract, you know, $400 a pound in cost. You know what I'm saying? Like, Yes, you have to watch both, but I think as long as you're pure with what your intent and you're putting out fire and it's marketed, well, like, you can't lose. So, you know, but it's, you know, there's no point of worrying about anything else if you don't have the main building block down, which is, you know, do you have good weed? Okay. Like, but that's, I think 60, 70% of the market right there is already, you know, chopped off, you know, so you're kind of like, you know, I don't know, like, it's,
Yeah. Do you, before we jump off, do you have any on the cultivation side? I'll ask you on the business side advice, and I'll ask you on the cultivation side. Like, a lot of, you know, I think we're one of the very few podcasts that we just really focus on cultivation mostly.
Right.
There's a little bit of business, but it's we, the growers, like, we're all, you know, growers. So, like, on the cultivation side, is there anything, any advice that you can give to any of these growers that are watching this or listening to this on technique, or any advice that you've learned over the years?
Yeah.
Talk a little closer.
Yeah. Take a lot of notes, you know, it's nice having a Roy. Everything I've ever done since I've had it, it's all logged. I can go back and I can look at stuff. Before that, I had notebooks, tons and tons and tons of notes in them. As you're going through trying to figure out how to dial in, don't do too many things at the same time. You know, so say you got all your notes, you know what's working, what's not working. Okay, I'm going to make a little change. Don't make four changes at the same time, because then if it works, you don't know what worked. And if it doesn't work,
one change at a time.
You know what I mean? Like, one change at a time, or you know, maybe two. Smoke a lot of other people's weed, like a lot of other people's weed, because I think as cultivators, you know, I mean, for me to go through just QC and everything every week, it's hard to smoke anybody else's weed because I'm smoking so much of our own work, you know? But I know leading up into the last couple of years of really figuring out what's really good quality and how to keep it there, I wouldn't have known it without smoking other people's weed, you know? I can say probably Blueprint was probably the first thing I've ever smoked that blew my mind, you know? And it was like, holy shit, this is the bar. I got to figure this out, you know? And he's been good. He travels around. He brings stuff back. He's like, bro, check this out. Check this out. And it's like, that's the hardest part, I think, as a cultivator, is to be able to look at yourself and be like, I ain't there, you know?
So figure out who's doing it and then, you know, be honest with yourself, put it out there, let people give you some feedback. And, you know, it sucks, you know, there ain't nothing worse than being told your weed fucking sucks, but, you know, you got to have that. So being honest with yourself, I think it's huge.
It's great advice, man. Yeah. I like that. Business side. What's up, Chocolate?
Yeah. I guess if I'm speaking on people that are like, you know, want to come up and do this, open up enough lights where you can hire enough people that matter to where you can afford to pay them. A lot of people, you know, open these smaller cultivations, which I respect the hell out of, but you know, they're, I mean, I couldn't do this without him. So kind of, it's kind of a two-part answer. It's like, open enough lights to where you don't have too many, to where you're just, you're out of control, but you have enough to where when you need marketing help, you know, you need post-production help, you know, you need, whatever, like I'd like to think I'm more of like sales, you know, operating the business, marketing, you know, designing, you know, products, product, you know, bringing new products, you know, whether it's a rosin cart or whatever we're doing. You know, if I didn't have enough lights or someone offset me like a Tyler, you know, it's, you got to have both pieces. And to think you can come into this space, there's so much going on every day, just like a traditional business, that I think from a grower standpoint, they think it's just, oh, being in the rooms is like, is what really matters. And it does, but you also got to push the other aspects just as hard. And we all know the companies out there that have just some okay candies, some cool packaging, like that's a route. You can take that route. But I think as we get further down this path, you know, you're seeing those companies go away and the consumers picking and choosing like, hey, you know, we're not the most expensive weed in Michigan, you know, and we're not raising our price, you know, we'd rather up production and backfill like our customer base, you know, of like cool blue collar people that want to smoke our weed in Michigan. Then, you know, you gotta, I would say open enough lights to where you can hire enough people to help you run a successful business that can get on enough shelves. Cause if you're too small, people don't.
What do you think the minimum light count is
to do something like that? 200.
200 lights.
Yeah. Somewhere about right there. But I think you start getting over that 400, that 450, 500.
Things are out of control.
You know, you start running some pretty high overheads. You got a lot of people on the team that got to eat. You know, you can do it, but like, let's be honest, our market in Michigan, I mean, we're lucky to have the borders open, you know, taking a lot of weed to Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, you know, all those states, you know, we're a $3 billion a year market, but I think without that border, we'll drop to about a 1.2. So, you know, and listen, that's business in general. Everyone has a window, right? No matter what you're doing. But our state's big, you know, we have the UP, we have upper Michigan, but there's not a lot of population up there. And what is there? They grow their own weed or they buy this and that from a store, you know, they'll buy, you know, $100 ounce, but you know, we're obviously ahead of that. So where we sell, our market cap is only probably 200 miles by 200 miles. So you got to think like, yo, I'm going to open a $30 million grow and sell to one state. I mean, from a businessman standpoint, that's insane. Like you can't sell to anywhere else. You can't sell internationally. Like, you know, think about when Lux was a thing, if they said, hey, Brandon, you can only sell to Southern California. You know, like how, you know, and I don't know what the future is going to hold, but like, I don't think anyone can gamble on putting money into infrastructure today that maybe we'll be able to ship in the future. Maybe we'll be able to go international. Who knows? But, you know, I think you got to be honest with like, how many people can you sell to, you know, like what's your angle to the market, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So, appreciate you guys making the trip out.
Yeah, man. Appreciate the
invite. Awesome.
It was an honor. And congratulations, man. This is a big win.
Thank you, bro.
That's a huge win.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's almost hasn't even set in yet, really. Like, I'm the kind of person that, like, the awards are cool, but it's just back at it Monday. We're just grinding, you know? So
have you seen an uptick in demand a little bit with it in your stores?
We luckily sell out every week.
You sell out anyways.
Yeah. I mean, I think people know what we do. You know, of course we got our haters in Michigan. Of course, you know, we got our fans, you know, that's any business, but we got some really good, strong retail partners that know what we're capable of already. You know, it's business as usual. Yeah. I mean, of course, like I'm sure we have a lot more fans, you know, people see the award, people see the trophy. We love that. But yeah, I mean, we've been doing this for a while, you know, now on the level we're at. It took a long time. There's some great companies ahead of us that won Zon Michigan that, you know, got to that point. And I think this was just that stamp that's like, okay, like, you know, our weed's where it needs to be.
Yeah. That's got to feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels good.
Congrats.
Cool. Thanks, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.